may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this very fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the full-service law firm of Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area with clients across the country. If you'd like to know more about OFP, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com. I also invite you to subscribe to my blog, blueprintforwealth.org, where you can find videos, audio, and articles of interest on tax, estate planning, and business planning on pretty much anything you want to hear about in those areas. And also, please read my column in the Washington Business Journal, which appears usually the first or second week of every month in the Washington Business Journal, entitled Blueprint for Wealth. Today, we're going to be talking about a tax issue that is near and dear to many of your hearts. It's when can you claim a deduction for the business use of your home, including if you have a daycare practice in your home. Now, generally, the rule is that you cannot deduct items that are related to the business use of your home unless you use it exclusively and regularly as your principal place of business. We'll talk about that in a second. Now, there's an alternative test. If you don't use it exclusively and regularly as your principal place of business, your home or a part of your home could be deductible if you use it exclusively and regularly as a place where you meet clients or customers or patients. And that's an important part of the test, but you also have to use it in a trade or business. Now, if you have a separate structure attached to your home, or not attached to your home, and you use it in connection with your trade or business, like a machine shop for doing automobile repair or something like that, then that also may qualify for a deduction for home office expenditure. Another test is if you use that home office on a regular basis for certain storage use, like storing inventory or product samples, you might be able to claim a deduction for the use of that space for business purposes. Rental use is also deductible under certain circumstances, and then you can also deduct a portion of your home that you use as a daycare facility under certain circumstances. Now, if you're an employee, they apply additional tests in addition to the exclusive and regular use in as a principal place of business. You may be able to deduct the use of your home if you're an employee if the business use of that portion of your home is for the convenience of your employer. You also cannot rent any part of your home to your employer and use the rented portion to perform services as an employee for that employer. So you can't rent it, but you may be able to claim a deduction. Now, what is exclusive use? Well, the word exclusive means only for that specific purpose. So to qualify under the exclusive use test, you have to use a specific area of your home only for your trade or business. That means you can't have your kids come and join you and watch TV in that particular area. Let's say you're an attorney and you use a den in your house to write legal briefs or prepare clients' tax returns or draft wills and trusts. Your family also uses the den for recreation, like they come in and they watch TV with you while you're doing your wills and trusts or preparing your tax returns. In that case, the den is not being used exclusively in your trade or business, so you can't claim a deduction for the business use of the den. Now, there are exceptions to this exclusive use test. You don't have to meet that test. If you use part of your home for storing inventory or product samples, like I mentioned before, that's a different category under which you can qualify for deduction. So if you're using a space for storing inventory or product samples, it doesn't have to be used exclusively for that. Or if you use the home as a daycare facility, you may be able to get out from under this exclusive use test. Now, I also said that you have to use it exclusively and regularly. Well, to qualify for regular use, you must use that specific area of your home, your den, your home office, whatever portion you're using, for business on a regular basis. That means that incidental or occasional business use won't qualify. It also has to be used in a trade or business. So that means that you have to use part of your home in connection with a trade or business. Let's say you use part of your home exclusively and regularly to read financial newsletters and periodicals and reports. And let's say you're also using it to clip bond coupons and carrying out similar investment activities. You don't make investments as a broker or dealer. You're just doing investment activity. So under the IRS rules, your activities are not part of a trade or business. Rather, it's investment activity. And you simply cannot claim a deduction for using your home office as a business use of your home. Now, earlier I was describing exclusively and regularly using that space in the as a principal place of business. Well, what is a principal place of business? Now, you might have more than one business location, including your home, used in your trade or business. But to qualify to deduct the expenses for the business use of your home under this principal place of business test, your home has to be your principal place of business for that trade or business. To determine whether it is your principal place of business, you have to consider the following. One, what's the relative importance of the activity that you perform at each place where you conduct your business? And two, what's the amount of time that you spend at each place where you're conducting business? Your home office will qualify as a principal place of business if you meet the following requirements. You use it exclusively and regularly for administrative or management activities, or you have no other fixed location where you conduct these substantial administrative or administrative activities. What are these activities? Billing your customers, your clients, or your patients, keeping books and records, ordering supplies, setting up appointments, and forwarding orders or writing reports. If you perform administrative or management activities at other locations, these activities won't disqualify your home office from being used as your principal place of business. Will not disqualify it. So, in other words, doing these activities is okay, and still you may be able to qualify your home office use as business use. So, for example, you have others that conduct your administrative or administrative management activities at locations other than your home. So another company does your billing from its place of business, or you conduct administrative or management activities at places that are not fixed locations of your business, such as in a car or a hotel room, or you occasionally conduct minimal administrative or management activities outside of your home. Those are examples of administrative activities that are okay. Let me give you some more examples. Let's say John is a plumber and he's self-employed. Most of John's time is spent in customers' homes and offices installing and repairing plumbing. He has a small office in his home that he uses exclusively and regularly for his administrative or management activities, such as billing or phoning customers or keeping appointments. John writes up estimates and records work completed at his customers' premises. He doesn't conduct any substantial administrative or management activities anywhere outside of his home, and he doesn't do his own billing in this case. He uses a local bookkeeper. John's home office will qualify as his principal place of business for deducting expenses for its use. He uses the home office for his administrative and management activities. And even though he's doing the billing outside the home, he's using a third party to do that. His choice of doing the billing by a third party doesn't disqualify his home office from being a home office for tax purposes. Here's another example. Let's say Pam is a self-employed sales rep for several different product lines, and she has an office in her home that she uses exclusively and regularly to set up appointments and write up orders and other reports for companies that she sells the products for. She occasionally writes up orders and sets up appointments from her hotel room when she's on the road making sales calls. Pam's business is selling products to customers all across the country. To make these sales, she regularly has to make visits to the customer to explain the products and take orders. Her home office, in this case, will qualify as her principal place of business for deducting expenses for its use. She conducts administrative or management activities there and has no other place where she conducts these activities. The fact that she's actually taking orders on the road or doing some other administrative activities in her hotel room does not disqualify her home office from being used as her principal place of business. Did you know that you can have more than one trade or business? Let's say you're an employee. Let's say you're a teacher, and your principal place of work is at school, where you have an office to do your schoolwork. But let's say you also have a mail-order jewelry business that you do exclusively in your home office, and that office is used exclusively for that business, not for doing schoolwork at school. If you meet all the other tests, you may be able to deduct expenses for the business use of your home for your jewelry business. Now, these rules are much more complex because even after you get past the test of determining whether your home office may qualify for deductibility, you have to go through a series of other tests to determine whether or not your expenses are in fact deductible. If you've got questions on the deductibility of your home office, give us a call at 703-218-2100. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth. And don't forget to subscribe to our blog at blueprintforwealth.org.
You're listening to Blueprint for Wealth with Wayne Zell. Learn how to better prepare for your future when Blueprint for Wealth returns in just a few moments.
A Legal Minute with Wayne Zell.
For companies that rely heavily on equipment to produce products or services, deciding whether to buy or lease equipment can be a critical aspect of the business plan. Even for businesses that rely more heavily on retail or other business models, financing equipment to start the business can be expensive. This should definitely be resolved before owners approach investors and others for financing. Buying equipment guarantees ownership over important resources for the business for the long term, but purchasing equipment outright can be very expensive. Leasing equipment, on the other hand, offers more flexibility for updating outdated equipment and may be cheaper in the short term. The downside to leasing? Over time, the costs of leasing may outweigh the costs of owning the equipment outright. Each business owner should consult with experienced business counsel to determine whether buying or leasing equipment is the best solution. Call us at 703-218-2100 for more information.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. If you have questions for Wayne, you can email him at radio@ofplaw.com or call him 703-218-2100. Now back to your host, Wayne Zell.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Rita Fagan. Welcome, Rita.
Good morning, Wayne, and good morning, listeners. Thank you very much.
Thanks for being on the show today. Rita is a reverse mortgage specialist with M&T Bank, and we'll talk a lot about reverse mortgages today because I think it's gotten a bad rap in recent years, and we should set the record straight a little bit, at least from M&T's perspective, right?
Looking forward to that.
All right. Rita was born in Kilgore, Texas. I don't know why she's here right now, but she's all the way on the East Coast, and she was educated in Texas and Oklahoma and has a degree in English and music. And are you going to sing for us, or do you play any instruments?
No singing this morning. Thank you.
And she was in the office technology industry with Xerox, where she was a sales representative, probably some of the best training you could ever get is at Xerox, isn't it? I've had a lot of people I've known over my career from Xerox, and they're very successful in any walks of life. They've had great, they have great training. And she became a manager of major accounts specializing in the legal and public sector industries. Well, that's what we do here. And following her career with Xerox, she began a second career as a reverse mortgage specialist and is an individual contributor where she serves the senior community in helping them make decisions about equity in their homes. She works for M&T Bank as a loan officer, working only in the reverse mortgage program. So this will be particularly interesting. Rita, first of all, what is the history behind reverse mortgages? Where did these products come from?
Well, the reverse mortgage has an interesting history. It started in 1989 as a collaboration between Housing and Urban Development and AARP. They were looking at projections of the upcoming baby boomers and the people who preceded them. And their thinking was, if there were no options developed based on the ones that were available at that time, then there would be an awful lot of people flooding care facilities. Their concern was not completely benign. They were worried that there was not enough capacity in terms of care facilities. And they were also worried that once people exhausted their resources, it would be a greater expense to taxpayers.
I didn't realize that it was originally sort of funded or researched. The research was based on AARP research. That's pretty interesting.
Yes, it's, you know, back in history. So it's now 22, 23 years old. It has undergone a lot of changes since then. As the collaboration continued, they meaning AARP and HUD, looked at the largest asset that most people had and were expected to have, and that was the equity in their homes.
Right.
And although there are conventional financial tools available, they realized that as people were aging, their income was fixed, and they wanted to develop a financial product that would allow them to access the equity in their home but make it different from conventional financing.
How did you get involved in reverse mortgages? What about your background and your upbringing and your life got you into the reverse mortgage industry?
Many people in the reverse mortgage industry have developed a sensitivity and a sense of caring based on family experiences, and I'm no exception. Having experienced the aging and difficulties with my own mother, where we tried to care for her at home, that experience was very fresh in my mind. This whole morass, and you feel helpless as an adult child of trying to understand what resources may be available because you're so devoted to your parent and you want only the best for them.
Right.
So I was motivated by personal experience in terms of being sensitized to the challenges that are out there for baby boomers or, you know, people who are not baby boomers necessarily, but dealing with a frail parent. From a career perspective, I was one of the casualties of corporate America. And as a middle manager, my job was downsized, meaning it didn't exist anymore.
Right.
So then I had to look around and decide, what do I want to do next? As a baby boomer myself, and having been, reflecting back on years and years, 20 years with Xerox Corporation as a manager in some capacity, I decided I wanted to be an individual contributor, meaning not manage other people, and that what would make the most sense to me would be to become a specialist in something. Wayne, if you've talked to people, and those of you out there who've ever had a background in technology, it becomes a young person's game in a lot of respects. And you have to think, does technology excite me? And I decided at that point it did not. And plus, you could never know enough, particularly as a manager.
Right.
You have to be a generalist.
Right.
So I had this craving to understand something and a calling, if you will, to be able to understand something, a tool of some kind that would really be able to help someone else. I had heard about the reverse mortgage program itself. I was concerned about it. I heard all the reputation that everybody else has, and I was concerned that it wasn't legitimate. But as I did my due diligence and researched it, I realized that this has
it's a very viable product.
It's a very viable,
important tool in helping elder providing elder care. What are some of the common misconceptions about reverse mortgages?
I'll share with you the two that I most often hear. The first one, and it is a huge misperception, is that the bank or the federal government will own my home. Mm-hmm. If I have a reverse mortgage, I don't want to do this because I want to continue to own my home. It's just a complete myth. Under the reverse mortgage is just a mortgage. It behaves differently from other mortgages. But with respect to title, title to the home always remains with the homeowner.
Right.
Regardless of if the homeowner today, and those of you listening, if you have a mortgage on your home, you're paying a conventional mortgage or your home equity line of credit, you still retain title because you're paying your property taxes and your homeowner's insurance.
Sure. What else? I mean, can I leave the home to my kids if I have a reverse mortgage?
Second misperception. People are very worried that they cannot leave their home to their children. There are lots of privileges that owning title to your home conveys, and one of them is, you're an attorney, you know this, I'm preaching to the choir here, of leaving your assets and developing a will, which I urge everyone to do. If you have a house, the house is both an asset and a debt. With a reverse mortgage, the reverse mortgage, depending on the amount of equity that anyone would withdraw from it, that will remain the same. It is your asset, and there are also a debt to the estate. So here's how it happens. It works exactly the same with conventional mortgages.
Let's use an example. Let's say I've got a house that is worth $300,000.
Okay.
All right? And
do you owe on it?
I paid my mortgage off 5 years ago.
Okay.
This is me, hopefully, in not too distant future. But I paid my mortgage off. There's $300,000 of equity in the house. And now I find that my medical costs and my in-home care is running me, you know, $10,000-$15,000 a month. What do I do? Can I use a reverse mortgage in that instance? How would it work?
Here's how it would work. The reverse mortgage is based on an actuarial table. It depends on your age. And if you're married, it depends on the age of you and your spouse collectively.
Okay.
In order to qualify, homeowners need to be 62 years old as a minimum. Now, in your case, if your home is worth, what's your home value? $300,000?
$300,000. Let's say it's $300,000. Probably low
say,
for the D.C. area, but it
yes.
is what it is.
All right. Let's say that you're 70 years old. You would be eligible based on the age. Let's assume you and your spouse are both 70 years old.
Okay.
You might be eligible for proceeds of $200,000.
Really?
Of the $300,000.
Wow.
Now, you're lucky. If you don't owe anything, you've got access to that full amount, less the costs of the loan. And that could be used to you or given to you in three or four different ways. You may wish to receive that amount of money as a lump sum. In
okay.
other words, the lender would write a check to you for that amount.
All right.
Another option would be a line of credit so that it would be available for you to write checks on or make withdrawals on as required by you. The other would be in monthly income.
You know, if I'm only making 1% on my savings account or 3% on my CDs, would it make more sense to borrow in the form of a line of credit and just draw down what I need when I need it?
I certainly would advocate looking at the reverse mortgage line of credit as an option.
Right. Is there an interest rate fluctuate? Does the interest rate fluctuate on the line of credit typically, or is it usually fixed or set? How does that work on the interest rate?
Interest rates are set by FHA, who as a subset of HUD now owns this program.
Mm-hmm.
On the fixed rate or the lump sum option, that is a fixed interest rate.
Okay.
For homeowners interested in a line of credit, that is a variable interest rate. It is a wonderful option. The interest rates are tied to the LIBOR, and today I think our quoted interest rate is 2.2%.
Goodness.
So back to your question on if it's cheap debt. Let's just say it's very cheap.
It's inexpensive bar, at least today, while interest rates remain low, it is.
And we know that the chairman, you know, the Federal Reserve chairman has indicated he's going to keep the internal borrowing rate low for at least 2 years. So,
And we certainly hope he stays by his word on that, because it is helping the economy significantly by keeping interest rates low in some ways. Other ways, it's not as beneficial. But so I've borrowed this $200,000 and I'm accruing interest on the loan. And if the interest rate is, let's say, 2% or 3%, let's say it's 3% fixed, over what period of time is it usually fixed on the fixed loan?
It's fixed for the life of the loan, and the life of the loan is defined as long as the homeowner and his or her spouse continue to maintain that home as their primary residence.
Okay. And it could be for the rest of their lives.
Yes.
Potentially. So if you're paying the interest down, then you just have a $200,000 mortgage balance.
Yes.
But if you can't pay that interest, it gets added on to the mortgage balance and it increases. Is there any limit on how much you can borrow, including the interest payment, or must you keep the interest payments current on the reverse mortgage?
There are no requirements at all for a homeowner to make payments of any kind. And that's one of the key flexibilities that HUD wanted to make sure they included in the reverse mortgage program to differentiate it from a conventional financing. Otherwise, why do it? If you've got to get yourself into a program where you're paying interest or principal of any kind, there's no benefit to the homeowner. The key flexibility of the reverse mortgage for most people is to free up their cash flow. Their existing income can now be diverted to their expenses or whatever they want to use their income for and not divert it to service a loan.
Okay.
To answer your question, over time, here's a key differentiator also with the reverse mortgage and how it behaves. Under conventional financing, which if we ever owned a home, we understand, at least a little bit of your payment every month will go to reduce your principal. Under the reverse mortgage, if the homeowner is not making any payments, they're free to do so if they wish. But if they do not make payments because there's no requirement, the loan balance does increase over time. All of that is discussed and disclosed with the homeowner with a series of amortization schedules so that they understand and can see the life of the loan over time. The amortizations actually go out on the actual actuarial table to age 100.
Okay. Now, what happens if I end up not paying any interest and the interest plus the compounded interest that's being added onto my principal, is it possible that it could exceed the fair market value of the property when I take out the loan?
It's possible. In that eventuality, FHA has a protection for the homeowner. The homeowner will never be upside down with a reverse mortgage.
Really?
That's a wonderful protection built in.
So it's not as bad as people thought it would be, right?
No, there's so many aspects of this program with flexibilities for the homeowner that there are more benefits than there are disadvantages.
Now, are there any recent changes that we need to know about in the 1 minute that we've got left?
Only 1 minute. Yes. Yep. What most people are not aware of is that the reverse mortgage has a new flexibility that was given to it in 2009, and that's to use the reverse mortgage to purchase a new home. It's ideal for homeowners wishing to downsize or change if you're trading off a larger home. A lot of homeowners don't want monthly payments, and they have a tendency to find what they could afford and pay cash for. The reverse mortgage would give them the option to, based on their age, get a reverse mortgage, use the rest of their proceeds from the sale of the big house and invest it in some way as leverage and still achieve the same result, no monthly payment.
Outstanding. Rita Fagan with M&T Bank. If people want to get in touch with you, what's your phone number?
703-963-6468.
Thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth and telling us all about reverse mortgages.
My pleasure. Thank you, Wayne.
And thanks for listening to Blueprint for Wealth. Join us next week for another special topic and special guest. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Wayne Zell and Blueprint for Wealth. Wayne will be back next Saturday morning at 10 with your Blueprint for Wealth right here on 1500 AM Federal News Radio.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial.